We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's the True Faith Newcastle United podcast. Alex Hurst, Charlotte Robson and Simon Campbell. And we're here to have a conversation about 1 year on, almost, from the Newcastle United takeover. I've already been interviewed a couple of times by journalists doing their big 1 year on piece. So ahead of pretty much every single podcast and content creator talking about the takeover 1 year on, we thought we'd be a bit sneaky and try and get ours in early so that you definitely listen to ours. And here you are. Thanks for joining us. Charlotte, it's nearly a year. For the purpose of this show, for the rest of the show, I'm just going to say it's been a year rather than having to unnecessarily...
I mean, it's like days, isn't it?
Yeah, it's days. So. People might be listening to this after the year. Who knows? It's been a year. Feelings right now, just looking back to that small period of our lives, that takeover period, that kind of couple of days either side.
Yeah, it's gone so fast, hasn't it? That period was just very mad for me personally. Like, lots of people wanting to talk about it, lots of news outlets and stuff wanting vox pops from basically anyone. Lots of people ambushing me with amnesty people and things like that. I can't believe it's been a year. There's been so much change. And, you know, people can be frustrated with the most recent result is Bournemouth. People can be frustrated with that, but actually step back and take stock of the last year and what a crazy like year it's been. I kind of just have a smile like starting to form on my face, starting to think about how far we've come in that time. So a wild, brilliant year, really.
Sorry, same question, mate.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like... I can't believe it's been a year. It's been a nice year of supporting football again, hasn't it? For us in a totally football fan sense, it has felt like what it felt like growing up playing, watching Newcastle play football. You go at the match with anticipation. You can hope and expect some sort of result or at least a performance that goes with it. When we lose football matches, you come away disappointed, not because the team was terrible and lost the game willingly almost. You come away because you think, actually, we could have won that. You come away thinking the players have played really well and we've lost a game of football. We've lost a competitive game of football. So that's been just the biggest change for me, is that reverting to almost what's like childhood for me. The last time Newcastle were like competitive and playing proper football and trying to win football matches every week. I suppose it was a short period under Pardew as well. But basically it's that feeling of engaging with the football club, looking forward to the weekend rather than going dutifully and just kind of having a city that cares about its football team again. It came back very quickly. I thought it would take a bit longer, but almost within a few weeks of the takeover, you had a city that was alive with football again, which had been missing for 15 plus years. So that's been my big takeaway from it.
It's been a transformative year, like you've both touched on. Maybe the first thing I want to talk about is just how well it's gone. Like, I don't want to be hyperbolic. I don't want to give credit where it isn't due to people who own football clubs. But if you'd have told fans, players, staff at the club, owners, that in the first year, not only would we escape relegation, but we would be able to sign some of the quality of players that we've signed. And hence, you know, the club have been knocked back by many footballers, I think. But the ones they've got are just extra. Like Bruno Guimarães is the obvious one. Alexander Isak. But to win as many Premier League games of football as they have, and almost, I think maybe the best comparison is try and think back to some of the club was chaos before. It was chaos. It was understaffed. It was run badly, in my opinion. It didn't do what it was supposed to do. So while the club may have maintained staying in the Premier League was its job, that to a fan, to this fan anyway, isn't the purpose of a football club, to stay in the Premier League. That's not why a football club exists, or solely exists anyway. And if you look at the chaos on and off the pitch of, if you look at the chaos of Southampton at home last year, 2-2 draw, look at the chaos of Leeds at home, look at the chaos of Wolves away, where just in front of you, no one had any clue what was going on off the pitch. No one had any clue what was going on. There was no communication. No one knew if they were going to get season ticket money back for a long time. No one knew if we were even going to try to sign a player. Turns out we weren't going to try and sign a new player in that transfer window and all of the stuff that came before it. And compare it to the stability of today. I think even though it might feel natural, this is what we were told it would be the opposite of. We were told that we were leaving stability with Mike Ashley, safe and stable, even though we knew what in front of our eyes was chaos. And it was going to be chaos moving forward, and it's been anything but. It's like I'm in awe of how well it's gone. Like in their wildest dreams, surely they wouldn't have think it's gone as well as it has. And you know, I want to hear from you two a little bit, maybe on what I've just said and your thoughts. But you know, for people listening, compare the Wolves away fixture or the Southampton at home fixture to Manchester City at home this season. Now, I know we haven't hit those highs since because of injuries. But compare for that to take place in less than a year, in kind of 10 months. I don't know how you do that.
For me, it's the like seeming like entire attitude shift of the entire club. Seeing that it's not just the bringing in Eddie Howe, who's brought a different mentality to our players and obviously brought in new players who have enhanced that. Kieran Trippier is like my standout for that. He's got this incredible sort of leadership skill and sort of like positive mentality, and I think so does Eddie Howe, and that has sort of bled down and the other players are feeling that. But it's also this like the whole mood is different in the club, around the club, the people going to the club shop. Like, no one went to the club shop before. And people are like, I had a drink with a friend before Bournemouth, and we walked up to the ground together before I met you, Alex. And he was like, I'm just actually going to go to the club shop before the game. And I was like, God, like, imagine someone saying that 1 year ago. I'd be like, why? Like, don't go there. You're putting money in Mike Ashley's pockets, or you're doing this. Like, don't do that. And now you're just like, brilliant, yeah, like, I hope you get something you want, like, I hope you have a great time. And just this sort of, the smiles on the faces of the people that work at the club as well. And people are working at the club. That's also new. Like, we've got people working on the fan side of things that never did really before, and like a dedicated job for that. And that we've got a CEO and we've got a director of football. Like, those are enormous, enormous things that have changed the whole mood. In like, again, don't want to be hyperbolic, and it really is easy to get carried away. But like the city, particularly the city of people who follow the football, but it just feels like a lighter place to be.
Yeah, I don't have too much more to add to that, because you've captured it pretty well. If you take it beyond the football club itself and the city itself, like, shops sell Newcastle United related stuff and sell it well.
Yeah,
People buy stuff from gift shops, from everything else. Like, I think Geordie Gifts in the Granger Market in particular has probably done very well out of Newcastle being a thing again and people liking and interacting with it. But people buy Newcastle shirts, people buy put the names on the back. We've got players now. You mentioned Bruno, like that. Everyone's got Bruno G on the back of their shirt. Whereas for years, he just didn't bother, did he? There's no name. You'd maybe get like a Jonas or something, but for about 15 years, there's been very few players that were back of the shirt worthy. But now you've got people walking around with Bruno on the back. You got people walking around with Botman on the back. You got people walking around with Isak on the back. I dare say Wilson. although Wilson signed before, he's become a player now that like has become a bit talismanic when he's fit. The Newcastle players have got like a connection with the fans again. People really care about them. People really like want to interact with them. There's the social media between players and fans is different again now. It's not just like you were shite at the weekend. It's not just like a total disjoint. It's like there's really like love, and Joe Linton probably encapsulates that perfectly, doesn't he? He went from being basically an outcast who everyone hated because he was so bad to he's an absolute fan favourite and everyone buzzes for him. So that kind of transformation in the relationship between the fans and the city and the football club has just been so ginormous that I think it's took us all a bit by surprise by how quickly that happened.
In a way, it's I'm not going to make this miserable podcast, but in a way it's so sad that we were kind of robbed of that for so long, because it, as I said, it so quickly people were so ready, and a lot of so's from me there, so sorry. But yes, very, very quickly people engaged. It was almost immediate, and it has lasted. It wasn't a sort of superficial, yeah, I'm back with the club. Like, it has lasted. People, we're a year on and people are more engaged than ever. People are frustrated when we play, you know, reasonably good game of football. Like, it's and to think, God, we had 15 years pretty much of like dross and disengagement and disenfranchisement with the club, and just feeling like, what is the point? It was right there. It was so easy, and people really wanted to engage with the club. So I'm not going to make it sad because we're there now, but God, we had a whole 15 years where this could have been the case.
Just one last point on the contrast of that kind of, yeah, you mentioned the Southampton game last season, Alex, that 2-2 draw. I was there and I came away from that feeling zero emotion. You know, we scored a last minute, in quotation marks, winner, only for it to still be succeeded by an equaliser in like the 97th minute, whatever it was. But I didn't. Neither of those goals really affected me. I was just like, all right, okay, we might get away with this. Bruce lives to fight another day. They scored. It's like, well, he's not going to go. It's a draw at home. And he just kind of came away from that stadium thinking, I've learned nothing about our team. I've learned nothing about where we're trying to get to. And he just kind of went home and thank God that's over. Contrast that to the most recent game at home to, who did we play?
Bournemouth.
So many B's, my name is Brighton. Bournemouth, and we've come away with a 1-1 draw and really, really disappointed. Like, I was as gutted after that game as I can remember being in a long, long time, because we dropped the points, because, you know, we didn't play as well as we would have liked, because I really wanted us to win the game, and conceding that goal really affected me, and I was really just upset. I'm maybe being a bit hyperbolic here, but you know what I mean. Like, I was emotionally engaged with that game and came away from it emotionally drained after 90 minutes of frustration and not getting the result we wanted. I came away really gutted and caring that had happened. A year ago, I didn't have one ounce of care left for what the club had become.
Well said, both. I think we'll break now for a message from our sponsors. I'll hand you over to Charlotte.
Guess what, everybody? UEFA Champions League soccer is streaming on Paramount Plus. 9 months of heart-stopping, hold-your-breath exhilaration is underway with the biggest stars, top teams, and craziest fan bases across Europe. I've yet to see evidence of a crazy fan base, by the way, in the Champions League. Watch every match from the group stage through the knockout rounds as Benzema and Real Madrid defend their title against Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea, PSG, Barcelona, and more in soccer's biggest club competition. That is for now, until they ruin it with another one. So don't miss a single sweat-soaked second, I hate saying that, of regulation time, stoppage time, and extra time. And stream every match of the UEFA Champions League live, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
I like how they clarify that you get the stoppage time.
Yeah, and extra time.
And extra time. And extra time. Sweat suits. I also never call it regulation time. Like, are we still in regulation time? No, nobody says that.
No one does. It's all. It is nice to get a weekly reminder that the Champions League does exist.
Yes.
You know, I'd forgotten.
Yes.
But yeah, stream it on Paramount Plus if that is available to you in the region in which you live in the world. Are you missing out on your favourite show because it's not available in your region? Try keeping your private time private. Well, let me introduce NordVPN. If you're bored of UK Netflix, because it said US, because a US company.
Yeah.
Why not take it for a spin in the US? Using NordVPN and a click of a button, you can do just that. No need to travel to Japan for your favorite anime.
Oh, thank God.
When NordVPN brings it right to you with 5,000 plus server options, no show is out of your reach. Using the link at the bottom of the description of this podcast, you can receive a huge discount on a 2-year plan and get a month free. We all love to binge. Don't know what binge means in particular because it doesn't specify. I assume
binge
it means television.
Shows, television. Yeah, television shows.
But privacy is a big deal too. NordVPN keeps your information encrypted, so you never have to worry about your IP or location getting out. NordVPN have also doubled down on keeping you safe with their new threat protection feature. Say goodbye to intrusive website ads and malware. Even if you download an infected file, threat protection kicks in and deletes it before it makes a mess of your computer.
Amazing.
Don't forget, there is literally no risk to your 30-day trial with a money-back guarantee. Give it a try, and if you like it, great. If you don't, we will pretend this awkward thing never happened. Don't blame me if it doesn't work. I'm just reading out the ad. Check out the link in the description to this podcast. Please click it. It makes us look good to our paymasters. Let's get back to it, though. Let's get back to our takeover 1-year conversation. Charlotte, you mentioned before about the fact that the club has not only exceeded, in my opinion, all expectations on the pitch, but off the pitch as well, just seems to be doing things, maybe things which aren't as heralded across.
They're not as sexy.
Yeah, they are. And that's probably right, because football is about winning games. There is nothing else to it. You can do anything in any other area. It can be the best community club in the world. You've got to win games of football. Ask Everton. But what they've done in going to two very well-run football clubs in different parts of the world, in Brighton and Atalanta, and taking their most important, almost, people, is the most un-Newcastle United thing. It really is absolutely remarkable that we've gone from a club which basically had Lee Charney doing every single job, and then a lot of people would argue not very well, to these guys who've come in Eales and Ashworth, who are operating, so it seems from the outside looking in, at the very top of their industry in terms of their ability to get their jobs done. I'm like, I still can't believe it. And, you know, doesn't mean you can beat Bournemouth, but Mick Martin said it really well on a blog of the Truth Face site. Newcastle didn't fail to beat Bournemouth because of long-standing structural issues around the football club that would make it impossible for them to beat Bournemouth. They lost because they underperformed on the day and had injuries, essentially. Yeah. And that is a comforting place. And, you know, boos at the end of a game are always very difficult to actually gauge how a fan base feels, because, you know, I think it's been a little bit kind of international break, need of content stuff from some media organisations or fan outlets about, is Eddie Howe under pressure? You know, well, this week, Everton at home tickets went on sale, which is a televised game at 7:30 on a Wednesday, and sold out within, you know, you couldn't get two seats together beyond 20 minutes of logging in. So the demand is very much still there to watch Eddie Howe's Newcastle. All of that's a nonsense. But yeah, just the fact, I mean, there's still a long way to go. This, you know, they talked a lot about a training ground at the start. We haven't heard about a new training ground, so we haven't heard about that in a long time. There's probably other positions within the club. Me and Charlotte, through the trust, you know, we speak to the new head of supporter services, brand new position, which again, under the old regime, just simply wouldn't have existed. It really is like a different football club. We've had, you know, some improvements to the interior of St. James's Park, which is nice, which hadn't happened in a long time. It seems like they've got all the little things right, as well as the big things. Mm. The big things are the most important. We'll talk about football and transfers in a bit, but the fact that there seems to be, well, in fact, that there is a team of people there working behind the scenes, it just means that, you know, when Bournemouth come to St. James's Park, and maybe they're not the best example, because I used to use clubs like Manchester City, so in fact, I'll leave Bournemouth behind and go to Manchester City. It wasn't just Manchester City's squad that you had to try and beat, which was 3 or 4 times the value of your own, or 5 times the wage budget of your own. You're at a huge disadvantage there anyway. It was the fact that, even regardless of that, those players trained better, ate better, they worked in a more professional, modern environment to suit their needs. They were supported by a superior team of people off the pitch in their day-to-day lives. The academy was furnished with better people and better facilities. Like, how do you beat the team on the pitch? But then also when you look at the team off the pitch, you think, well, right, okay, we'll beat you 2-1 this year under Rafa Benitez in 2019. But next year, that gap is just going to keep getting bigger. And now, hopefully, whilst not at the Manchester City, whilst at our direct rivals in the league, and I'm talking about like probably Brighton here, Leicester, Wolves, those kind of teams, West Ham below the top six, who want to be in the top six, I kind of strongly believe that we are going to be not in as good a position or a position to compete with them in that respect, but a better position. And that's why I'm just convinced we're going to be absolutely class. Convinced.
We are class, man.
Yeah, we already are.
We are class.
Well, that's a weird thing, haven't we? We've basically, it's maybe a bit early to say, but we've caught up those teams in the space of a year. You know, we were back in that conversation with Brighton, with Wolves, with teams that I thought we'd lost so much ground on. I thought, this is going to take a long, long time, even when the takeover did happen. It's going to take a long, long time to get back to that first pack of teams before you can even start talking about top six. But we've, like you say, by getting everything right, by doing all the right things, and by building on and off the pitch progressively the whole time since they started, we've kind of bridged that gap to those chasing pack already. I think it remains to be seen what the next step is, because that next step is so difficult and very few teams have managed it ever. And, you know, it'll be new to Ashworth, it'll be new to Eels. You know, they don't know much about transforming it. Yeah. They've made us a stable Premier League team very quickly. You know, we're not going to be talking about relegation ever again, I don't think. Like, that's brilliant. But that next step of making us competitive, making us a team that's on the, you know, on the betting slip for winning things is a totally different ballpark. I believe they can do it. I think they've put the right people in place, but it's still a massive challenge and one I look forward to.
Yeah, very much so. Let's talk about the ownership structure a little bit more then. Because I was a little bit surprised in both of the media interviews I've done so far about the first year of the takeover. Surprise is not the right word, actually, because I understand why I was asked. I suppose it just was a little, you know, didn't expect it to still be as big a conversation maybe in the media. That's probably my naivety, the national media this is, about our ownership. And I was asked, you know, how it's been kind of since, beyond the kind of initial conversations about the fact that Newcastle United are owned by the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia and what that means for Newcastle fans and the human rights abuses in Saudi Arabia. And I don't know about you guys, I don't want to pull the wool over anyone's eyes here. I don't think I've ever tried on this subject. It's just not part of the conversation every single day, every single week, every single game with Newcastle United fans. It is simply just not part of the conversation. And I don't think that will apply to every single person listening to this, but I think it will be the vast, vast majority. That's my perception. Guys, what do you think? How has it affected you? And what do you, same kind of question about the rest of the fan base?
Yeah, I think you know, you immediately start thinking about what's going on the pitch. Who are we signing? That's our preoccupation. That's what we talk about. So, you know, I don't know that there are many podcasts of other clubs that spend a lot of time properly analysing the other interests of their majority ownership. There's, you know, there's only so much you can say, and I'm not going to sit here and be like, not bothered, because, like, you know, it's a thing that is a bother. Like, that sounds really like reductive, but it is. It's like a thing that you should think about and talk about, but as far as I as a football fan interact with that element, I just don't really. Like, I'm watching what's on the pitch, I'm thinking about what they're doing at the club, and that's really sort of as far as it goes for me. And you know, and I know there are lots of finger pointing journalists who will say that makes me a bad person, and you know what, there's that, add it to the list, there's tons of other stuff that makes me a bad person, but it's you're right, it's just not part of the current conversation, is it?
I think it's a really good point to make, because to talk about other clubs as well, because it's part of the conversation hasn't even come into it with other clubs. You know, we were told when this happened, oh, the rest of the Premier League will be into you about this. Funnily enough, other football clans of other clubs don't care either. Apart from, you know, a kind of vocal minority part of fans groups or whatever, or social media. When the day the takeover happens, you know, there's a kind of fan group loop. I'm not saying the name of the grandparent organization, the parent organization.
Grandparent.
It's a grandparent organization.
Weird.
Yeah. parent of the parent organization.
Sure.
And it was just like, this is, you know, other supporters, trusts and fan groups were like, this is a disgrace. We will never treat Newcastle the same again. We will be lobbying against it. And it was all noise. Yeah. Nothing's happened. Nothing's been done. I think when we played Spurs, there was a banner with about 16 people outside. And there were 16 people. I'm not saying you shouldn't do that. I'm not saying that's a bad thing to do. I'm just saying it is not representative of how football fans treat their sport, for better or for worse. So I really like that point, Charlotte. Well done. Great point.
Yes. I live for approval, so that has buoyed me.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because the situation hasn't gone away. Nothing has changed. Yeah. But you can't just have the same conversation week on week on week, can you? Like, yeah, we've talked about it. We've talked about it in this podcast. It was in the news a bit. There was lots of questions being asked. And the answer was kind of the same. It's like, what do you want us as football supporters to say to you? What? It's totally out of our control. And it's following the same pattern as all the other big money with question marks over it that came in the Premier League. Like, nobody talks about Man City's owners anymore. Nobody really talked about Roman Abramovich until Russia started a war. Like, it was absolutely fine until that point, because like you say, Charlotte, people who watch and support football watch it for the players, they watch it for the manager, they watch it for the sport. Yes, football was polluted a long, long time ago with large amounts of money from various sources, some of which were questionable, but we can't just keep talking about that over and over and over again. You know, there will be small groups that Alex says, and I absolutely commend them for still caring and wanting to ask those questions. That's fine. I agree with them. I wish I had the same kind of enthusiasm for it, because questions should be asked. But ultimately, the vast majority of the country don't want to talk about that over and over and over again. Football is, always has been and still is, a release from real life for so many people. It is for me, certainly. You know, you finish work on a Friday, you look forward to going to a football match and talking to your mates and having a few drinks and enjoying the match. That's what it is and always has been to me. The politics of it just doesn't really touch the sides in terms of, yes, I'm aware of it, but that's not why I go to football much. Is that not why I care about football? We've got a massive World Cup coming up in November that everyone's talking about it a little bit now, but as soon as it starts, all anyone will be talking about is, oh, England lost to such and such.
Yeah.
Or did you see that game where Peru won? Like, you know, it's not, football is unique in that sense. It doesn't matter what happens off the pitch. It will always have the same result and people will talk about the football. So it's interesting, but I think we're following the exact same pattern as all the other questions that happen over these things, and it just kind of, it doesn't go away, it goes quiet, because there's only so many conversations you can have about it when ultimately the people who would have any ability to change it aren't going to, so, you know, there we are.
They're especially not going to now.
Well, it also serves as a nice little reminder between the realities of social media and real life, because one of the interviews I've done so far, which was by an international organization, news organization, put to me things said on Twitter, and it's just like, by individual fans, so I don't know who they are, it's kind of proof of the existence of sports washing, and I'm just like, man, I don't care. Like, I don't care if some guy on Twitter's like praising Mohammed bin Salman for exchanging Ukrainian prisoners, or like it literally has nothing to do with my life. Like, I honestly, if you hadn't said it to me now, I never would have heard of it. I don't spend a lot of time on social media myself. Please follow me at TFL. but it almost seems like you've had to reduce the argument to that. It almost feels a bit like you've lost, in my opinion, for how aggressive the coverage was towards Newcastle fans. I'm talking about here. You want to have a conversation about the validity of foreign ownership in the Premier League, particularly foreign ownership by nation states. I'm here for it. I'm here for it. That's a conversation that should happen, but doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't happen. And that's, and to say it again, and I got sick of saying it last year, football works for a lot of people. Works. It makes a lot of people a lot of money, including people who cover it. And that's not a bad thing. But also, you want me, and I say me, I mean Newcastle fans, but me, because I'm part of these conversations, to try and justify things which I have no say over. It just seems like an absurd conversation to have, whilst being able to acknowledge that human rights abuses in Saudi Arabia exist, should be spotlighted, should be highlighted, and should be taken to task. I can't do it, though. The idea that I can do that, or you can do it, Charlotte, or Si, or anyone listening.
I extra can't do it, because I'm female.
Yeah, you can't even go by yourself. Maybe that's not true. I don't know.
I don't think it would be like the most warm environment for me, so I'm just going to stay home.
Yeah. I think we've talked about that. Then let's get back to the football. Si, what are you?
Sports wash are you?
Exactly. Just going to wash me sports. Si, tell me, give me just one, because it's a time-sensitive podcast. You know, you have to get involved on Patreon if you want to hear lots more me, Si, Charlotte, and our True Faith colleagues. It's £8 a month for probably about 6 to 7 extra podcasts a week on Newcastle United. We'd love to have you. Yes, I pick a highlight for me, please. Pick a highlight, not including the takeover. What's the highlight been since, mate?
A footballing highlight was, I mean, my most enjoyable game was I've got a couple. I'll be as quick as I can. Yeah, Leeds away was a fantastic experience. You know, that was the catalyst for the revival of Newcastle United. That was the turning point for me. What a great day that was. What a great result. But the 95th minute Bruno Guimarães header against Leicester kind of summed up the full circle that we'd come. Like, that was pretty much safety guaranteed. It was also evidence of what this Newcastle team had become. That kind of a point would have been a very good result at the time, but no, we're going to go and score a 95th minute winner where every player busts a gut to get forward and score that goal. Like the Willock run, Bruno running 40 yards at full pelt to then head it in, like that encapsulated the entire change of Newcastle United. That was the key moment for me.
I think just to further that one, the beautiful thing about the Leeds result was just how much it mattered. And yeah, it's like we hadn't had a moment like that in, I don't know, in my life maybe, or certainly as an adult supporting Newcastle, something that was so consequential. Because Newcastle, I mean, you know, history would suggest that Newcastle would have got much better still after that, and still signed Bruno and become the good team that they became. But at the time it was like, even me, you know, we did a podcast with Craig Hope at the time, and before the Leeds game, I think, and it was like he's got to go there and at least get a point at Leeds. Like, if you go there and lose after drawing with Watford, and you know, at the time we'd hardly played, and there was I think there was another break after Leeds of about 10 days before Everton, and it was like it was our only league game in about 3 weeks, and it's like if you go into that game and get beat by a very poor Leeds side, how are you going to stay up? And yeah, that was a real emotional day. It was kind of like we got back to the car and obviously do bits of content for Patreon, and it was just like, fuck, I'm so tired. Yeah. I've got to drive home now. After just like the easiest away game of the season, it was like I've got a 19-hour drive ahead of me. That's how it felt.
This is going to sound like a weird one because obviously this hasn't been like the most impactful signing. But for me, the sort of, and I'm going to use a word you used earlier, talismanic, because I really liked it, Simon. It's talismanic, or like a token, or like the moment I realised things had really properly changed was in the January transfer window, and after the Cambridge game when we lost, obviously, to Cambridge, League One Cambridge, and we lost because there was no focal point, there was no striker. We had all these chances and there was no striker, and then within days that ownership structure changed the plan, I think, because they had been publicly saying, we're not going out for a striker, we're not doing this, and they went and bought a striker. Okay, they bought Chris Wood, and he hasn't been the most impactful. So I understand that is not, I'm not saying that was the most amazing like purchase ever, but the kind of recognition and then quick action for me was like, it just... I was like, oh, okay, they really, really want this. They're really, really paying attention. They bought, you know, not a great striker, but from a relegation rival, that's a smart thing to do. Like, all of these things, like, that for me was sort of a token of, like, this is an ownership that is really paying attention and really, really wants to make this work.
I'm talking about the Leeds game again, but just to take on from that is that we beat Leeds. We then did the interesting trip to Saudi Arabia, which seemed to do the lads wonders in terms of their fitness levels, their energy levels when they came back. But also, we then went and bought two more players, didn't we? We brought in Bruno after winning a game. So it wasn't like, oh, we might have enough here. It was like, actually, we've won a game, strike while the iron's hot. Let's complete the job here. Let's build this squad and bring in Bruno and...
Byrne and Target.
So Dan Byrne and then Target as well, yeah. You know, with days to go in that transfer window, they could have said, all right, we've started winning games now, we might have enough here, but they didn't. They made sure and brought forward plans in the summer, and my God, what a difference that made, and I'm so grateful that they did bring in Bruno and Byrne and Target, because that just showed me that, yeah, they don't just want to they don't just want to scrape survival. They want to do it comfortably so that there's something to build on. They didn't want to just finish 17th and then have to start from scratch again. It's like, right, if we're going to spend money and stay up, they had the foresight of, right, let's start building a team now. And they did that, and it's, you know, it's paying dividends.
So many things I want to talk about here. Keep track of them, such are the excellence of the points.
Well, maybe we'll do a Patreon podcast.
Maybe we will on the actual anniversary.
Yeah.
But, okay, so, Charlotte, I think you're right. You know what? I'd even predate... I think your point is excellent, but I'd predate the signing. I think signing Kieran Trippier.
Partial approval.
I think the signing of Kieran Trippier was just extraordinary. It was just, this guy is playing in the Champions League. It's not like he wasn't getting a game. He's an England international. He wants to play at the World Cup. He should play at the World Cup. And it's a bit like Trippier and Bruno. It wasn't just the fact that we wanted to sign them. It's the fact that they were convinced. Within the financial structure, wage structure that we already have, it wasn't like we're paying these guys 300 grand a week. Far from it. And they were convinced by what our owners sold to them to come and sign for Newcastle United. That in itself was extraordinary.
Yes.
I can't, you know.
I mean, for me, Trippier is like the pinnacle signing, because I think, you know, you talked about Isak and you talked about Bruno at the top of the pod. They came because of him as well, right? Trippier's bought in. Trippier, who's like this internet, like played in Spain, played for England, you know, is this international, yeah, you know, I think he is a massive part of why they came. I don't want to underplay the selling of our owners as well. I'm sure that they talked a good game and they really do have high ambitions. But this sort of point at, yeah, I guess it was just the quick, turnaround and the realizing of what was going on is the kind of point I was trying to make.
A great point. And I've forgotten what I wanted to say.
Oh, no, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, the excellent point, Si, as well. I suppose.
So sorry.
Thanks.
No, I had a further point to make about it, but I've forgotten. Never mind. I think my top moment is probably got to be, I think maybe about 65 minutes in the Arsenal game. Si, me and you watched that game together, and we'd already taken the lead. So it was 1-0, and it was just a realization that we were just better than Arsenal. Yeah. That there was, apart from a fluke or a bit of bad luck or even a bit of genius from one of the Arsenal players, there was simply no way that Arsenal, in their biggest game in a decade, were going to win that game. Such was Newcastle's superiority, and we've only kind of seen that performance once since because of a variety of factors against Manchester City, but such was Newcastle's superiority, and it was like, it was for the last 25 minutes of that game, was able just to kind of, because we had seats like just below where the owners are, like three rows below the owners in the ground, so they're good seats, and it's just like a chance to just almost just enjoy the previous... Yeah. How many months would it be? Like 7 months or something? It was just like, this is the culmination of everything that's happened so far in this game of football. The atmosphere was like, it's a very difficult one to compare atmospheres. You know, we've all got our own famous atmospheres. But that was just like, this is the future of this football club. It's not going to be like every week because it depends on performance and the context of the game. But it was like Newcastle... A bit like the last two games of last season, if I put them into one, Newcastle should have been ideal opponents for Arsenal and Burnley, who had massive games. You don't want to play a top six team. You don't want to play a team battling relegation zone. You don't want a team going for Europe. You don't want to, you know, you want to play a mid-table team with fuck all to play for. And Newcastle were streets ahead of both. And that Arsenal game for me, and particularly that little 65-minute spell at the end of the game, it was just like, I'm just going to enjoy this for the first time in a long time. Even under Rafa Benitez in the Championship, it was good, but there was a lot riding on it, and it was there was a lot of tension. There was no tension in that moment because Newcastle were just so superior, and that in itself is almost a kind of like. And I wanted to talk about this now at the end of the show. A couple more points to make before we finish off. I've said it before, in their wildest dreams, I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong, but it could not have gone as well as that. The form of the team, and that's, you know, I want to ask you the question about how much money has played in the revival, and is it just a case, because there are detractors out there who just say, it's nothing special because they've just come and spent 200 million quid. Like, what do you expect? You should expect the kind of improvement you've got, but you know, try sitting there in that Arsenal game in that moment, and it's more than four January signings. Do you know what I mean? That was all it was. It was just four signings in January. It was an amazing night. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, well, I think the Arsenal game, that you mentioned the Burnley game, you also, if you think, it was just the way we transformed from that nitty-gritty grinding out a 1-0 win at Leeds, and then there was a couple more like that. I think, I mean, we smashed Everton, but then there was the Aston Villa game was very nitty-gritty. We won that one by a goal. Who else did we beat? Was there a Brighton 2-1 in there?
Yeah.
Very, very grinding out results. Obviously, the Leicester one, last-minute winner, to the end of the season where we just smashed Norwich. We beat Southampton 2-0 at the Canter with Bruno's. Oh, it was 2-1. But yeah, we went 2-0 up, didn't we? We were comfortable. Did we not?
Went 1-0 down.
Oh, man, my memory's so bad. It just felt like we smashed them.
You did, didn't you? Because put Palace and Wolves in there where they were tight games, but yeah. Newcastle's superiority was such that they were never really in doubt the results.
That gradual, by the point of Arsenal, where we're just winning games by being the better team, like you say, and just being able to enjoy a performance of football that you would not have expected to see that quickly, at the point when we're already mathematically safe, and then to do the same at Burnley as well, because Burnley desperately needed to win that game to stay up, and it didn't take much for us to beat them. We just played really well, and we were just better. Now we're seeing signs of, I won't call it regression, but we're back to that kind of nitty-gritty at the moment. We're playing much better football, but teams have worked us out, and that's how football works, and it's very interesting. But the general progression of, from the moment we were taken over, to not being able to get the results straight away, to having to take a few batterings from Tottenham, Leicester, Liverpool. I think was there a Man United game before Christmas? No, Man City, yeah. Man City. And then the Man United game on Boxing Day or 27th, whatever it was. And this is seeing the kind of gradual improvements, and it was gradual the whole time. There was improvements every week to the point of that Arsenal game was what made me believe that this is a project that will not stop. It will continue to improve, whether it's incremental. You know, there'll be weeks where it doesn't improve much, and then there'll be weeks where you just see a massive, massive change. And it's like, I really look forward to that. At no point are you expecting to see a huge drop off or a huge regression or a backward step. It'll be small steps, big steps, but always in the right direction.
Yeah, well said. I suppose, and as we move toward the end of the show, anything you guys think could have been done better, anything disappointed you so far? And this, you know, let's be hypercritical. Here we are, we've given lots of praise out.
Yeah, I've just remembered part of your other question was about the money as well. But I think we've got to keep going back to the fact that it's all the non-signings that and their improvement that has been the revelation about Newcastle United. That turnaround at the start of the year wasn't, yes, there was some new players in there, but then Trippier immediately got injured. And it was all about Joe Linton. It was all about Shelvey being mint again. It was Callum Wilson playing the best football of his life. It was Maximan looking like a footballer again. It was Miggy. It was, you know, it was all these players being class. It was Emil Kraft coming in for Trippier, and a player who I'd completely written off as a professional footballer, looking like a really solid right back. It was Cher coming back from the brink of a career going down the toilet. Yes, then once that had happened, players like Bruno coming back in the team did make a huge difference. Trippier coming back, he's class. Target having a proper fullback, it obviously makes a huge difference. But you could also argue that buying Kieran Trippier for 12 million and signing Matty Target on loan is, they're not like you've bought yourselves out of relegation, is it? Like they're normal signings that a team like Newcastle should always be making. So there's an argument about that as well. But yeah, I think it's so harsh to reduce the achievements of Eddie Howe and all of those players, every single one of them, and the coaching staff, you've just bought good players and sorted yourselves out. It really, really isn't like that at all.
It's really lazy. It's really lazy. It's also like, sorry, is that not what other clubs do? Is it not what a transfer window exists for? Like, we haven't broken the mold by spending some money. We've broken our mold, and people aren't used to it. But for me, it just belies a sort of threat. People feel that we're going to become a proper threat.
Norman and I did a full podcast analysing the exact quotes of people reducing Eddie Howe's success last season into solely financial terms, and I think we did a good job of tearing it apart. So you're not on Patreon, go back and listen to that. I wouldn't say it's worth signing up for, because there's lots of other good content, but it was one of my favourite ones that we did. And like you correctly say, Charlotte, it's a brilliant analysis, because they basically say, you're not allowed to play this game. You know, this game exists for the clubs that we enjoy and we like to cover. you know, how dare you bring in Dan Byrne from Brighton's bench?
Now
you know?
We've got to get a train up to Newcastle. That's so far away.
Yeah. I suppose in terms of things that could have been done better, I'm always conscious of the sheer rebuilding task that had to take place at that football club. So this isn't kind of, they should have done all this, but it's definitely things that could have been done. And if they haven't been done already, should be done much, much better in future. If you look at the kind of farce around season tickets in the summer, that was a joke. There was no explanation given over why only 1,000 were released, why it only went back to season 18-19 that fans were allowed. If you're going to put restrictions on fans for buying things, I think they deserve better than what they got. But this is hypercriticism because that's not a big thing to most fans. You know, I think communication in general with supporters could be better. You know, I was lucky to go meet Manus Davley and Murdad. Could you see it? April, I think. We had a great conversation then. And like we said, I think things in that respect are going to accelerate quite well. But really bigger picture stuff, like we've heard from the chairman of the football club once when we bought the club. Like I think we as supporters, and it doesn't have to be like tomorrow, but what is the long-term plan for this club? Like what are you... you know, is there going to be a new training ground? Is that a priority? Are you looking into the stadium? Like, these are things that I understand why football club owners stay away from them to an extent, but also this was an ownership group who kind of talked a lot about transparency when they were trying to buy the club, quite rightly so, and I agree with everything they said. It would be great to kind of get a little bit more of that as we move forward. You know, that might take another year. I'm not saying it has to happen now. I'm just saying, in terms of things, if I look back at the last year or so, what could have been done better? I definitely think that's an area that could do with a lot of improvement. It's not important as winning games of football. It's just not. I wish it was, but it's just not. So I understand why they would prioritise building a football club and building a football team. That is infinitely more important than you see it getting in front of a camera talking about. But it doesn't mean you can't do both. Anything else? I think that's everything I had planned for you guys. Anything you guys want to say that you think we haven't talked about?
No, I think we've covered it, haven't we? I agree with your sort of little criticism points. I think that there's always room for improvement, right? Even when we're like, wow, this is amazing. You should always be striving to be better in everything you do. In my working life, I do that. In my life, I try and do that. And it's no exception for the club, so there's always ways it can be better, but I'm pretty fucking happy with how it's going so far.
Yeah, you can't look forward to that anything other than optimism, can you? Now I think it's going to be a very interesting few months ahead. You know, results wise we'd like to see an improvement, just because we've been a little bit I'm going to try and use my words carefully. I'll say disappointed, but not because of the level of performance or because where we look like a bad team, but because we haven't got the points we deserved for the performances. And we've got that kind of thing looming over us of all these big players that have come to Newcastle, and also looking ahead to the next transfer window. It's like, well, if you want to buy more Sven Botmans and more Brunos, they're going to come to a club that's fighting for the top six. They're probably less likely to come for a team if we continue to drop points and stick around the mid-table. You know, it's wonderful not to even be looking at the bottom eight and thinking that's ever going to happen again. But It's interesting, and I think it's I look forward to seeing how we tackle this and how Eddie Howe turns it around, because we need to start winning some football matches a bit more regularly. The expectation that has come with being class again is again happened far more quickly than I would have expected. Now, you can't help that. You can't help that people go to football matches, you know, they don't see Bournemouth at home as a relegation battler anymore. That's fine. That's fair. But maybe we do need to kind of just remember via the medium of listening to such a great podcast as this, that where we were just less than a year ago at the point of recording. So it's an interesting one, but because of how fast this train is traveling, it's just constantly evolving, and I love it, but it's mad, it's wild.
Yeah, I'll finish off with, you know what, a thing for Amanda Staveley in particular. No one was doubted, particularly for some reason, out of the whole ownership group, no one was doubted more than she was. She doesn't know what she's doing. She's a liar. She's a fantasist. She has almost blown open this idea, this kind of fragile football, in my opinion, football ego, particularly in the Premier League, of like, this is the hardest thing in the world. Oh, so that, you know, my experience of dealing with Newcastle United before this takeover was like, it's just, this is just the hardest thing in the world. You know, you wouldn't understand. Like, it's
I'm gonna say it. It's because she's female.
Yeah, because she's female,
I think.
And she has not only proved that actually someone from without us, from outside of the game, and a woman can come in and do well in this environment, but exceed the expectations, the very best expectations, in my opinion, they probably had of themselves. I don't know that, but to win as many games as football, I think I had a look, we've lost something like 6 for our last 25 in the Premier League, which is just, in the Premier League's a hard league. Like, it's why all the best players and managers are here. And to come in and do that, like you say, Si, with Emile Kraft playing a lot of those games at right back, is just like, you know, I'd like to say I don't have the words, but I got to think of some. So I'd just say really grateful. And I also, like Sean, you just made the point about continued improvement. I don't think anyone at that football club is sat there patting themselves on the back thinking job done. You saw that this summer, another, what, £122 million or something spent in the summer.
Grueling transfer window as well, you know, lots of hits and lots of misses and lots of having to go back to the drawing board.
And this is the thing, again, I wanted to finish this show, but like how good has the transfer window been? Like, fucking hell. Like, you say, me and Science put a Rafa Benitez with his manager here, and he basically said, like, if half of your signings work out, you've done all right, because it's so hard to particularly from abroad, find footballers who are going to come in and like better your first team. Every single signing so far, every single one, has been better. And then to sign Byrne, and then to sign Botman again for the same position. Wow, we're impressed. We're impressed. You know, let us know what you think on social media. It's at TFNUFC, is the True Faith podcast account. And you know, this is going to be a conversation for the next few weeks, I imagine, as we get closer to that 1 year anniversary of October 7th. But I'll leave it there. Thanks so much to you two, Charlotte and Si, for joining me on this Sunday morning. Thanks to everyone who listens. We really appreciate it. We'll be back with the free podcast. There might be another free podcast through the week, but there'll definitely be one this time next week, hopefully after we have smashed Fulham.
Into smithereens.
Thank you very much.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.